Support for NPR and the following message come from our sponsor, Whole Foods Market. Having a party? Whatever you're celebrating, Whole Foods Market has everything you need for a spectacular event. Premium meats, prepared foods, desserts, and more. Start every celebration at Whole Foods Market.
Kung Fu Panda 4 is the latest entry in the popular and surprisingly thoughtful animated film franchise. Jack Black returns to voice our titular hero as he embarks on a quest alongside a devious fox voiced by Awkwafina. Together, they must face a new villain played by Viola Davis. I'm Stephen Thompson, and today we are talking about Kung Fu Panda 4 on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from our sponsor, Whole Foods Market. Planning a party or honoring a recent grad? Whatever the celebration, Whole Foods Market can make things easy, starting with some delicious marinated steaks, always antibiotic and hormone-free. Simple and easy eats are ready in the prepared foods department. And for dessert, how about a luscious berry chantilly cake? Not in the mood to cook? Their catering menu offers festive options ready to order online at shop.wfm.com. Start every celebration at Whole Foods Market. This message comes from NPR sponsor eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Finding someone who gets you on dating apps is hard. That's why eHarmony is different. eHarmony is designed to help you bring out your personality on your profile so you make more genuine connections. Take their compatibility quiz to get started and see for yourself. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today. This message comes from NPR sponsor, the official Hacks podcast from Max. Join the creators and showrunners of Hacks as they discuss each episode and speak with the cast and crew about the making of the series. Listen to the official Hacks podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Support for this podcast and the following message come from Third Love. Third Love makes solutions for every bra problem. Give yourself more lift, smoothing, and get straps that stay put. Every style's wear-tested on real women, made from premium materials, with a virtual fitting room to help you find your perfect fit. Comfort and support are guaranteed. It's time to get your problem solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with code PODCAST15.
Joining me today is co-host of Slate's ICYMI podcast and former Pop Culture Happy Hour producer, Candace Lim. Hey, Candace.
Hello.
It is great to have you back, making her Pop Culture Happy Hour debut. Ooh. Regina Barber. She's the scientist in residence on NPR's science podcast, Shortwave. Welcome to the show, Regina.
Thank you. I am so excited. This is like a dream come true.
As our resident scientist, you will be called upon to explain all of the physics in this movie.
It doesn't work. It's not real.
Wow. Okay, so the original Kung Fu Panda came out in 2008 and launched a billion-dollar animated franchise with multiple sequels and TV spin-offs, as well as video games and toys. It starred Jack Black as Po, a gigantic, adorable panda who becomes the highly unlikely dragon warrior with the aid of a much smaller red panda voiced by Dustin Hoffman. You got your hero's journey, your training montages, your wisecracks about food and the horrors of stairs, and you got some pretty stellar voice acting.
All I know are two things, kicking butt and taking names. And if I'm being completely honest, I'm not even that good at the name taking.
Now Kung Fu Panda 4 finds Po living comfortably as the dragon warrior, but trouble arises in two very different forms. First, Po runs afoul of a thieving trickster fox named Jen, voiced by Awkwafina, and then there's also the larger matter of the evil Chameleon, a tiny, shape-shifting lizard sorceress. She's voiced by Viola Davis. Po and Jen embark on a quest to find and battle the Chameleon before it's too late, and they're tailed every step of the way by Po's nervous helicopter dads, his biological father, voiced by Bryan Cranston, and the father who raised him, a fussy goose, voiced by James Hong. Kung Fu Panda 4 is in theaters now. Candace, I'm going to start with you. What did you think of Kung Fu Panda 4?
This movie is about approaching retirement, taxes, regional fame, being from the streets. I love this movie, okay? I have so much love for the KFP franchise because, you know, the first one came out when I was like 11 and it was my first Jack Black movie. It was one of the first movies that like I bought the video game for. Most significantly, you know, there was something kind of revolutionary at the time about this film starring a panda who was culturally, visually Chinese, yet speaks with an American accent. Jack Black is from SoCal, so am I. And in my head, I was like, this movie is very much a metaphor for my existence as someone who was raised culturally Chinese but sounded American. And that was maybe my first mainstream encounter with specifically Chinese American representation. And the fact that this was a kids' movie, my parents approved. Mm-hmm. And I've just always loved the way this franchise grows up with its audience and meets them there and brings up darker matter later. And so I am a post stan. I was very excited to watch the fourth one. 10 out of 10, no notes.
Wow. All right, wow. Candace. Wow. I did not realize that you and I had in common a deep and abiding love for the Kung Fu Panda franchise.
We see each other.
All right, how about you, Regina?
I was in my 20s when it came out, the first one, and it wasn't really on my radar as, like, being so meaningful and, like, really affecting, like, how I actually saw myself. Candace, I actually relate, mm-hmm. because Kung Fu Panda 3 came out, and I took my daughter, and I left that movie thinking, this is about intersectionality. Yeah. He talks about, I'm a teacher, I'm a student, I'm a son of a goose, and I'm a panda. I can be all these things, because he was so confused about identity. And because I'm like half Chinese and half Mexican-American, like it was this moment where I was like, oh my God, you can be all of them. Like I was kind of going through that too as an adult. And my daughter is going through that, right? So like we had this discussion about intersectionality after Kung Fu Panda 3. We watched all of them again, you know, getting ready for this. I took her to the screening. We had the best time. I still think Kung Fu Panda 3 is better.
So I came to the first Kung Fu Panda movie at the tender age of 35 when it came out, and I fell completely in love with it. I think all four films are visually stunning, mm-hmm. wonderfully voice acted, extremely charming, and deeper, particularly the first three films, than you might expect a movie called Kung Fu Panda or Kung Fu Panda 2 totally. Or Kung Fu Panda 3 to be. They are, as you say, about identity. There's also a recurring thread in these films about chosen family that I find really, really powerful. They're also very, very funny. Mm-hmm. And my relationship with these films is that I, like Regina, watched them with my kids. I'm extraordinarily fond of this franchise. I came out of this film feeling like this was the fourth best film of the four. Yeah. It is the least kind of emotionally resonant of the four films. This is more cutting than I mean for it to sound, but it's got a little bit of a Return of Jafar quality to
Ouch.
It.
I picked that up too.
It is slight. The first three films fit together so beautifully as a trilogy.
It did.
I would like for it to have built the story a little bit more than it does. It is fun. It is gorgeous to look at.
It had good fighting scenes.
It has very, very, very strong battle scenes. I think Viola Davis is an extraordinarily
well- I didn't know it was her.
Oh, you didn't?
That was a surprise for me. Like, at the end, I know everyone else was, like, watching trailers, and I was like, I wanted to go in clean. And the whole time I'm listening to this, and I was like, who is this Chinese woman? Because she kept on saying things like, don't slouch. She keeps on saying that, don't slouch. And I was like, oh, that's my mom. So I like, who is this Chinese American actor? And at the end, I'm like, it's Viola Davis.
Yeah.
She did amazing.
Once I possess the kung fu of every master villain, no one will dare question my power.
I do want to point out, if you watch the trailer and you're worried that it's going to be wall-to-wall fart jokes, the one fart joke is in the trailer, so don't worry too much about that.
It does land, though. I did enjoy it.
It does.
It lands, and I think it lands more in the context of the film than it does in the trailer.
Yes, absolutely.
But if you're afraid that this is a gross degradation of this franchise, it's not at all.
What I felt when I was watching is that the other Kung Fu Pandas had, like, a clear theme, you know? And the theme of this movie is everything has to change. Like, you know, the most predictable thing in life is change.
Right.
But it took a while to get there, and it wasn't super crystallized. It took a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I should clarify, like, right at the beginning of the film, Poe is talking to his mentor, you know, played by Dustin Hoffman, and Poe is informed, like, you have been the Dragon Warrior. You kind of got what you were looking to become. But now I'm telling you that you are destined to be the spiritual leader of the Valley of Peace.
Master Shifu, I finally found something I'm good at, and now you want to just take it away from me?
No one's taking anything away, Poe. Who you are will always be a part of what you become.
Yeah, but where's the skadoosh? You know what I mean? The shushaburi! I don't want to seem ungrateful, but I don't know anything about passing on wisdom or inspiring hope.
It's kind of an opportunity to have another hero's journey where he resists the call and kind of has to learn to embrace change. But that's kind of the premise of the film. But once it kind of sets off on a journey, like we have to go find this villain and try to defeat this villain, it's kind of only returning to it just kind of as callbacks and not necessarily as like a grand overarching theme of a movie or an overarching lesson of the movie that people can take away the way they did with the first three films.
Mm-hmm. I feel like this film weirdly felt like a sitcom to me, where there were like three plot lines. The villains had their own villains. Mm-hmm. And my like genuine only thing was that I felt like there was not enough Poe, because, you know, the first film, they really follow him. They may do a quick cutaway to see what Tai Lung is up to, but it's really following Poe on that journey forward. Whereas this one, it's crisscrossing of like Poe's doing this, his dads are doing that, the villain's doing this. And that, I wondered if it would get kind of confusing for like a younger audience. But I will say this, I think in terms of like what has improved animation style, clearly in 2008, they were working with different programs here. This film does this thing where like the hairs on the furs are so fine that you want to touch them. Like it's very texturized. The character design itself reminded me actually a lot of Zootopia.
Oh, I love Zootopia.
And Sing. And Madagascar, which is really one of my also favorite animated films, because that is another film that is both marrying high comedy, you know, that Ben Stiller stuff, along with like a lot of heart and a lot of stuff about found family, because they're in a zoo. So, yeah.
I will say, I'm just realizing that this idea of like competition being toxic. The dads at first were kind of jealous of each other. The character played by Angelina Jolie, the tigress, is very put off in the first movie that she wasn't selected. Dustin Hoffman is constantly in this state of like, I wish this happened to me. But kind of that envy and that jealousy and that fighting each other never pays off in these movies. Mm-hmm. What always pays off in these movies is coming to terms with what is reality and teaming up every single time.
What did you think about the Awkwafina of it all, as Candace might say? Talking to people about this film, I've heard a lot of people sort of express to me Awkwafina fatigue. How did you feel about her presence here? If you were skeptical going in, did she win you over?
This is tough because I never want to get in front of someone's bookings, but this idea of Awkwafina fatigue is interesting because the criticism that has been leveled against her, I think, is valid. I shared some of it as well. But at the same time, it's like when you think about the landscape of Hollywood for Asian actors who can do roles like this and not feel bad about it, unfortunately, there's a handful, and Awkwafina does have something about her that makes her a perfect voice actor. It's a very distinct, likable tone that mixes really well with Jack Black. I think the other funny thing is Jack Black is from Santa Monica and Awkwafina is from like New York. So a part of me is like, East meets West. Interesting.
I like that. I agree. The kind of criticisms of the way she kind of presents herself and like how she is in movies, I can understand. But I also, as an Asian American, who is being represented and who is being criticized and who's not being criticized? And like, what's the level of criticism to certain people that is fair, but who is not being criticized? And I think about that a lot, too.
Also think about the fact that when I rewatched the first Kung Fu Panda movie, I was like, okay, so we have Dustin Hoffman playing Master Shifu. Interesting. And you, as an adult, watch that entire film just waiting for a white actor to slip up and go a little too left, a little too right. I had the same fear with Viola Davis, honestly, when she first popped up as the Chameleon, the Chameleon. And I...
Good How I Met Your Mother reference.
Thank you. I just think it's really interesting that Kung Fu Panda, the franchise, has kind of escaped that criticism about like having white actors playing Chinese characters, because maybe the question there is like, well, did we really say these animals are Chinese, or do you think they're Chinese? Is this all coded? Can animals have a race? And it's like, okay, I get it.
I think it's because the actors themselves are pretty careful. I don't think Dustin Hoffman goes a little to the left or a little to the right. I think he's just angry Dustin Hoffman. And I think Jack Black is just ridiculous SoCal Jack Black
himself.
It's just himself. And I think, and I do want to say that to answer Steven's initial question, I went in with a little bit of skepticism too, and because I am kind of torn about like kind of the the criticisms of Awkwafina and stuff like that. And I thought it was going to be a little over the top, but I think she did an okay job. Honestly, I'm going to be fair. I think she reined it in a bit, and I think she was herself, and I think it was good.
Oh, wow, look at the time. Remember we have to do that thing down by the place with that guy?
Yeah, and I'm glad you said that, Regina, because I had the same reaction that this is a more, it's not exactly a subdued performance. There are subtleties in this performance.
It seems more sincere.
And she's a trickster. She's a foil to Poe's earnestness and a foil to Poe's, you know, desire to do the right thing. And they're kind of bouncing off each other. And I think they have real chemistry.
I agree.
Well then, come and get it.
No. Don't come and get it.
Destroy them!
I ended up liking this performance and hope that people don't, you know, skip the movie on that basis.
It kind of reminded me of Shang-Chi a little bit about her character there.
You know what it reminded me of? Jen, played by Awkwafina, has this backstory where she was like an orphan, just like Poe. She was a bit of a scoundrel, kind of Aladdin, pickpocketing thief in the black market like a fox. And I was like, okay, who's another fox who also had a seedy past? Mr. Nick Wilde from Zootopia, played by Jason Bateman.
Yeah, that's right.
And I was like, here we go. Here we go, people having a crush on a fox yet again, repeating these patterns.
Nick Wilde is one of my favorites, 100%.
I mean, formative.
I guess my last question is, do you feel like this story has run its course? I mean, clearly, if this does well, they're going to make more of them. Do you feel like this story has been told? Are you interested in further explorations of this world?
Factually, as the scientist here, I'm just worried about James Hong. He's 95 years old. Mm-hmm. I love the father character. I think he's the most genuine parent, Chinese parent character that I've ever seen. I love him. I don't know how much longer he's going to be around. So I feel like maybe that's why it should end. Because I couldn't imagine the series without such a loving, caring, anxious Chinese parent.
Yeah.
And a sad point. Thanks for bringing us down, Regina.
I know, but I love him. The life is full of change. Hey. We have to embrace it.
The Goose is also my favorite character. Mm-hmm. There is something about him that is so anxious, yet so entrepreneurial, yet so supportive of his son. And I think those three qualities, you take and give some if you grew up Asian American, being like, yeah, I wish my mom was more like that Goose, et cetera, et cetera.
100%. I'm sorry, Mom.
When we talk about the longevity of this franchise, something that I love about Kung Fu Panda is that I feel like they really grow up with their audience. And what I mean by that is, you know, in the first movie, when I was 11, it never pinged me as odd that Poe was a panda whose dad was a goose. Didn't phase me. I was like, yeah. And in the second movie, so we're talking a few years later, you know, I'm 15, and that movie brings up some, like, kind of darker themes and topics, one of which is that Poe was adopted when his single goose father found him in a box of radishes, and that is because there was a panda genocide, and Poe's parents had to storm safely to sacrifice themselves in the war. And I was like, whoa, I don't know if 11-year-old me could have comprehended that, but I like that the franchise took the time to roll out their movies and to meet us where we are, because they needed us to grow up and be like, Poe is changing, you are changing, here are the subtle ways you learn about your history, and sometimes that requires being kind of an adult and talking about adultier stuff.
Yeah, I love it.
You're tapping into something that I'm really, really glad you brought up, which is just that these movies are not just funny cartoon panda fighting movies. There are movies about biological family versus chosen family, about, you know, being more than you think you are. You know, some of these are themes that a lot of movies come to, but I really find the arc of the relationship between Poe and his dads, his biological father and the father who raised him, and their relationship with each other.
Mm-hmm. It's so sweet. And they've just accepted it.
Which, to this movie's credit, this movie teams up.
Like a buddy comedy.
Yeah, it kind of creates, has like a little buddy comedy subplot where the two dads are kind of fussily chasing after him, trying to make sure that he's okay.
What if the chameleon knows we're coming? Or she could be anywhere. Anyone.
Lee, would you please show a little backbone?
I'm sorry, but bravery was never really my specialty.
You don't have to be brave. You just have to act brave.
Act brave.
I find that really moving. And I'm really glad that these movies have leaned so hard into those relationships. And that's part of what keeps me coming back to these movies. It's not just that they're funny. It's not just that they're beautiful to look at. It's not just that they're really well acted. I love it when these films dig deep into these themes the way particularly I think Kung Fu Panda 3 did. And so if they continue making them, I hope they keep leaning into that, because that's part of what makes these movies, I think, not just fun, but special.
Mm-hmm. And there's such an art to that, that truly I'm so supportive of this franchise that I want my grandkids to roll me onto the spaceship AMC to opening day of Kung Fu Panda 20. I am all here for it, because it crosses generations. It crosses cultures and borders and noodles.
Noodles. God, I'm so glad we can agree that the Kung Fu Panda movies are awesome. We want to know what you think about Kung Fu Panda 4. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Regina Barber, Candace Lim, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Liz Metzger and edited by Mike Katziff. Our supervising producer is Jessica Reedy, and Hello Come In provides our theme music. Thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Stephen Thompson, and we will see you all tomorrow.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Grammarly. You use multiple platforms every day at work. Writing is involved for most of them. That's why Grammarly works where you work. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them create more impactful writing. It works across 500,000 apps and websites. With one click, go from editing drafts in hours to seconds. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
On this week's episode of Wildcard, actor Chris Pine tells us it's okay not to be perfect.
My film got absolutely decimated when it premiered, which brings up for me one of my primary triggers or whatever is like not being liked.
I'm Rachel Martin. Chris Pine on how to find joy in imperfection. That's on NPR's new podcast, Wildcard, the game where cards control the conversation. I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.